You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Hello, you. It's Dawn Sarah with this week's episode of Sex Gets Real. It is a doozy. First up, I want to let everyone know I've been getting emails from so many of you asking how you can support the podcast over the years, and I finally got off my ass and created a Patreon for the show. I campaign endlessly for everyone to pay for their porn and to pay sex educators, because we all know that in our sex-negative society, especially post-election, that sex and paying for it is not something that's valued. And I continued to have a lot of shame around asking for money to help me support the podcast. And I decided that as my act of resistance, I would step up and actually say, hey, all of you who love the show, you can now support me and help me keeping the podcast going by going to patreon.com/sexgetsreal. And of course, there's all kinds of fun rewards, and I will be adding more rewards and changing things as we go and as I learn, but please check it out. $1 a month is the lowest reward, and that would actually be really amazing and magical and lovely. So do check that out. I also want to let you know that Hotels by Day is back as a sponsor for this episode. As we get closer to Valentine's Day, I want to remind all of you who have lovers or partners or sweethearts or even just friends that you want to pamper, it can be a really fun thing around Valentine's Day to set up some kind of daytime rendezvous, whether it's for a day of spa treatments or a sexy lunch away from the office, or you just want to get naked in the middle of the day as a nice little sexy role play treat. You can actually get 5% off with the code SGR5OFF for Sex Gets Real at hotelsbyday.com. So don't forget, Valentine's Day, just a couple of weeks away, and this could be that super delicious surprise that you offer to someone. So check that out, and please be sure to head to their website just so that they know that all of you are hearing all of this. So this episode features two listener confessions on the theme of firsts for January. The first listener confession is from Andrea about how attending her first munch changed her life. Then I'm going to have this amazing interview with Erica Lust, who I will tell you more about in just a minute. And then after my interview with Erica, be sure to stay tuned, because there is another confession from Brian about his very first prostate orgasm. And I actually had a voiceover actor read Brian's story, so you can settle in for all of the delicious and very naughty, I might add, details at the end of this episode. Here is Andrea with her confession about attending her first munch.
Hello, I'm here to tell you the story of my first munch. I ask you to please be patient through the backstory, because I feel that it adds significance to what happens at the end. I've been married for 10 years. And I'm going through a divorce. My marriage was good at the beginning, and my husband was addicted to porn and masturbation. And how that showed up in our lives is that we had a sexless marriage. He never really touched me, and because cheating was not available to me, I read a lot of books, romance books mostly, with good sex in them. And I did a lot of masturbating. I ended up becoming more and more interested in stories that had a BDSM bend to them. Of course, 50 Shades of Grey came out, and I read all of those books, and I realized that I actually really like this stuff, and that it's okay for me to admit that. My ex-husband had moved out of the house. I was letting go of my marriage. I was letting go of what I thought I was supposed to be. And in the middle of that, I decided I no longer had to ignore my sexuality. I got on FetLife.com and I found a local group of BDSM and I went to a munch. I made the plan. I got in the car. I drove to the meeting place, which was just a restaurant. I sat in the driveway of the restaurant. I sat in the parking lot having this type of conversation with myself. You're not going in there. Are you crazy? You've got kids at home. You are not going in there. You drove all the way to the restaurant. Yes, you are going in there. All you're going to do is talk to some people. You're normal. They're normal. You're going. No, you're not. It doesn't matter that you drove all the way here. You don't have to go into that restaurant. So I took a deep breath and I put on my big girl panties and I walked in and I was nervous and I was scared and I didn't really know what I was doing. And I ended up having a wonderful conversation with a bunch of wonderful people. They were community college professors and IT professionals and completely, yes, I am using air quotes, normal people. And so I really enjoyed it. I didn't see anyone there that I was particularly attracted to, but I didn't care. It felt so good to be able to just be with people who were so honest about the kind of sexuality that they were into. And so I had spent a couple of hours. I had a cocktail and some appetizers, and I decided it was time to go. And I was starting to get my stuff together. And this man walks in. He was very late. And I thought, oh, who is that? And we definitely had chemistry. And there was a spark on both sides. And he asked for my screen name. And I thought, oh, he'll never contact me. Except that he did. For someone who was lonely, even though I was married, I was lonely in my marriage. And even though I had been out of the marriage for a year, it was so painful that I had just been lonely for a very long time. And I found someone. I found someone that I was able to play with and have fun with. And he healed me through touch in ways that I didn't even know I needed to be healed. It was incredible. And really, it was exactly what I needed. He and I are still together. It's been 2 years now. And we are completely enjoying exploring our sexuality together. And we're having fun. I had no idea that my very first munch was going to lead to something that has really opened up my whole life. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Andrea. That was wonderful and delightful and such a delicious first. Next up is my chat with Erica Lust. Erica Lust is a filmmaker and a mom, a writer, a blogger, and owner and founder of Erica Lust Films, where she offers an alternative to the mainstream porn industry. She's also the creator of a groundbreaking audiovisual project called XConfessions.com, which is the first crowdsourced series that brought adult film to cinema screens. Erica's films are some of the hottest for me that are out on the market when it comes to ethical porn and erotic films. And My desperately budding little erotic filmmaker heart would love to be like her someday. So I hope you enjoy this fantastic chat with Erica. And then, even though at the end of my chat with Erica, I sign off, there is a second listener confession at the end. So stay tuned for Brian's confession all about his first prostate orgasm with his wife. And it's super explicit. Welcome to the show, Erica. I am ridiculously excited to talk to you today.
Well, thank you very much.
I've done so much wonderful. It's the best homework in the world when I get to watch porn and watch behind the scenes of making porn to just really get a feel for your aesthetic and the kinds of videos that you do. And one of the things that I just really love about your films is that there's these little moments of humor. Either the entire film is funny, like the one about building IKEA furniture, or there's these little like winks and nods to the audience where you see like a picture of a fox and a hare that kind of refers back to another video in the series. And I think what really comes forward for me about your films is because there's this kind of little wink and nod and tongue in cheek, it feels really unapologetic and shame-free. Like there's nothing that you're hiding in what you're doing, and it feels really open. And I love that so much. I mean, your films are I think, some of the hottest in the world. But I would love to know, just for our listeners, how you would describe your films to someone who hasn't seen them before.
Well, I used to say that what I do is independent adult cinema. When I say those three words, I use them normally because it's, I mean, it's obviously adult work, but it's independent because I finance it myself and I make it myself, and it's cinema because I work with the medium of cinema. So they are really films, you know. I'm interested in the vision of it, in the narrative, in all of these different details. And for me, it's really about playing with this medium and, you know, and telling stories about sex. That's what I'm interested in. You know, I used to say I'm not really interested in porn as porn. I'm interested in sex, and I'm interested in all these different stories and ideas around it. And I think that's the great challenge. So what I do is I play with this, and I imagine in my mind films out of people's confessions. And then I, you know, sit down with my team, my crew, and think about how can we make this situation or this story into something really intriguing and fascinating and beautiful.
I love that you say stories about sex. I feel that when I watch your films, in that there's such an emphasis on how the two people are relating in the little moments, the gasps, the eye contact, the touching, even the motivation, you know, behind why people are choosing to have sex with each other.
That's exactly what I kind of, when I started to look at regular porn somehow, that's kind of what I felt I was missing out on. I felt that most of it was just kind of boring because it didn't really tell anything about these people, who they were, why they adored each other, why they wanted each other, what was, you know, the whole situation between them, where did that desire came from. And I think that's, for me, that's the most important part when I'm constructing a situation, a story. It's thinking about the context. Who are these people? Why do they want each other? In what situation are they? In what, you know, location are they? And trying to create that story out of it. And then I think it's very interesting when you talk about, you know, the fun of it and all these, you know, funny moments and situations. And that has a lot to do with that for me, sex is really something that I think is a lot of fun. And I see many times in just regular porn that it's, you know, it's so serious somehow. It's, you know, I miss out on people having fun.
That's actually one of the things that stood out to me the most when I was watching. So for people who are listening, if you go to Vimeo and search for Erica Lust, you can actually see a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes compilations from all the ex-confessions filmings and some interviews. But what just struck me so much about those behind-the-scenes was the laughter between takes, the laughter on the set, your excitement over what was about to happen. And even while the filming was happening, you silently kind of cheering or covering your mouth with excitement over what was unfolding before you. And there's just this clear joy that's coming out of not only you, but like everyone who's on the set. And that feels really special.
But it's also, it's amazing really watching people who are into each other having great sex. I mean, it's so much like wonderful energy going on. And I think that is really something that makes these films very different from the mainstream pornography that many times feels like the actors are not really into each other. Especially the women, they tend to look, you know, like, well, they could do something else instead. What they do for dinner this night or whatever. But yeah, many times you don't see that passion between them. And I think one of the most important ingredients is actually, you know, the cast, obviously, how you choose your actors and that you talk to them and you make them choose each other, kind of, you know. Every time when I'm doing a casting interview, when I'm getting to know a new actor or an actress, I try to figure out who they are, what they like, and what people do they like, with what other actors or actresses would they like to work. Mm-hmm. So all of them kind of, you know, they have their favorite list where I know people they are already interested in, and then when I get to, you know, combine people for a shooting, then I can look at that list and I know if they're interested in working with that actor or actress, if it's someone that they already feel into.
That feels really special. And I think that comes across so clearly in the films that you make. And even in the behind the scenes, you know, of just the way the actors are eating lunch together and interacting with each other and having these conversations. I mean, it feels personal. And I love that. And I know that you've compared your films to kind of the slow food movement, where traditional porn is more like fast food. And I would love if you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, I think that the most of the porn out there today, it's mass-produced, and it's produced by people who are not really caring about the films or the people in them. What they are caring about the most is earning money out of the business they are doing. And I feel that when people ask me, so what about your movies? How do they relate to this? I used to say, well, it's a little the same as the restaurant business, right? That a fine family restaurant and Burger King or McDonald's or Kentucky Fried Chicken, the only thing they have, you know, in common is that they are selling food, you know, in the end, they are providing food to people. But everything else is different about the experience, you know, the ingredients, the food they choose, if they go to the market or if they go to a huge supermarket, the chefs working behind, the ambient in the restaurant, the, you know, all of it. It's about all that experience. And I think that sometimes people are just, you know, today watching porn online for free on all these tubes, you know, all these porn tubes. There's so many of them. And most of the content is kind of shitty. You know, it's not very interesting. It's not very interesting cinematographic-wise. It's not very interesting, you know, the quality they are providing. It's surrounded by these ugly pop-ups that are selling all kind of different products, and you know, like Viagra and medical drugs, and they have many times very horrible banners saying, you know, fuck a teenager close to your home, or watch a grandma pee, or you know, like just kind of ugly content around it. Mm-hmm. And what I feel that it's many times getting so anti-erotic, and I want to create, you know, this erotic experience and this beautiful feeling that when you get into my world online and my websites, you feel comfortable with everything you see around you, you know, that you feel that it's all around, it's full of beauty and erotic images that are appealing. But back to the food. Well, you know, it's if you think about these videos that we've seen on the internet now a few years back, you know, the chickens standing next to each other in the chicken factories. That's a horrible image. And when you see that, you, or at least I feel like I would not like to eat that kind of chicken ever, ever again. And sometimes when I think about porn, I think the same way, that if you realize how a lot of the porn is actually made with, you know, with the people behind it, then you don't want to consume that kind of product any longer. And I think that one of the things that could be very interesting is if people, as responsible consumers, start looking at the content they are actually consuming. Who's behind it? You know, if you go online and you surf on porn websites, have a look. Do they have, you know, an about section where they talk about the people behind this site? Or is it just a regular name of a company where there's no faces and no actual names. Mm-hmm. I want to feel that the people who are working with me, that we are all proud of what we do. You know, this is porn that you can be proud of. It feels good. You know, we know with what values we have made it. We know that it's been made in an ethical process where we care about everyone involved, the crew and the cast and our audience.
And, you know, that's something that really I adore about what you're doing. I get so many emails from people who are struggling with their penis size, or because they can't orgasm when their boyfriend fucks them, or they have a lot of anxiety around not only the performance aspect of sex that we've all been learning from porn, but also there's this struggle that I'm noticing around the vulnerability and the connection piece.
But they're not good enough.
Right. Right, yeah. Exactly. And
because all this kind of porn athletes having sex, you know, and what they are really, they are not really, of course they're really people, but still, I mean, they're, you know, chosen to do that kind of work because they probably have better management of their penises than just a regular guy, you know. And I think that What many, many people want is to see more down-to-earth, normal people mm-hmm. being involved in sexual actions, you know. I see it all the time. I hear my audience writing to me and asking me for, you know, more diversity, for more people of different races, for more people of different body types, for more people of different ages. From, you know, they want to see the whole humanity kind of on the screen, not only these, you know, penetrative, masculine porn machines, like, you know, pumping, pumping, pumping. And the Barbie dolls, you know, the one style or another. But I mean, if you go to many of these porn sites online, even many of the glamour sites that are supposed to stand for, you know, a more beautiful image and all of that part, but still, you see exactly the same girl time after time after time. She only has, you know, a different hairstyle, a different hair color, but it's the same kind of very young teenage, you know, body kind of. Late teenager, of course, because we all know that you can't work in adult if you're under 18. But what is happening is that many of these directors and producers, they are making these girls look younger than they actually are. Well, I feel that when it comes to finding actors and actresses, it's a lot more interesting working with people who have more of a real life experience. Mm-hmm. And many times when you are very young, you haven't experienced so much. So maybe you don't have as much to transmit on screen as someone a little older with, you know, a whole other erotic process that they have gone through in life.
Something really interesting occurred to me as you were talking just now, because one of the things that I've talked about on the show and had other sex educators talk about on the show is that because we don't see sex modeled for us when we're growing up by our parents and we don't have an opportunity to actually see sex happening, that porn often becomes the way that we inform ourselves of what sex is supposed to look like, how we're supposed to look, and who we're supposed to desire. And I think that also with that comes a certain level of shame. And I wonder if, from a marketing perspective, for kind of like the bigger porn companies, you know, is it profitable for people to feel ashamed of their sexuality? Because if you can't share your sexuality with others, then you're going to keep coming back to the place where you can experience that sexuality. And it's going to be, you know, kind of the traditional pornography. It's that secret that you keep. You know, whereas with your films, there's this feeling of there's nothing to be ashamed of. There's nothing to hide from. Like, there's all of these different ways to experience your body, to experience pleasure, to engage with others. And it feels like an invitation and a re-education.
I'm really happy when I hear you saying that, obviously, because it's something that I've been trying to do, really. With my work, I'm trying to show a more diverse view of sexuality. I think that there's so many people having so many issues with insecurity when it comes to sex, feeling that somehow they are strange or different from normal people because they have inclinations to different styles of sex that are not portrayed as the normal way sometimes. And I think that if you watch this kind of new adult, indie cinema that is becoming more and more popular lately. Yeah, I think that if you watch that kind of films, you can actually re-educate yourself somehow, and you can start feeling that maybe your kind of sexuality is represented on screen and feel more secure, that you are not alone of, you know, being that kind of person, that there's other people wanting the same. I mean, there's so many things that we've seen in porn, in the mainstream traditional porn, time after time, that we actually started to believe that that's the way it's done. You talked before, for example, about women thinking that they can't orgasm. One of the most interesting things when it comes to this issue is that most mainstream traditional porn shows women orgasm out of penetrative sex. But when it comes to investigations, people are actually, you know, telling us the truth that most women are orgasm climaxing out of clitoris sex. Mm-hmm. But we don't see that so much in regular porn. But I've seen, for example, when I worked with my cast and most actresses, almost all of them, they touch themselves when that moment is coming. And just to see this kind of sexual behavior, it helps you a lot to relax and starting to understand, okay, so maybe it's not just me. Maybe this is the way that it actually works.
I actually read in an interview that you did a little while back that you don't require your female actresses to orgasm as part of a scene, that you're actually more interested in like the experience, yeah, the pleasure and the connection. And that feels super refreshing to me for that reason that you just stated. And I'd love to know, is that still something that you subscribe to?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's impossible. You can't ask someone just to orgasm because it's a film. It's something that sometimes happens and sometimes it doesn't, and it has a lot to do with different factors of how comfortable you feel, the climate around you, you know, if it's hot or if it's cold, or do you have a good connection with your partner or not. And you know, even in normal life, in a partnership, there's days where you are more connected and days where you're not. But still, sex can be fantastic even if you're not, you know, having an orgasm. Mm-hmm. So I think that is something that you have to leave up to every situation. And you don't need to show it in every movie you make, you know. The movies can be very different. I have a lot of movies also where men are, you know, are coming on screen, are ejaculating, of course. But then I have a lot others where you don't see it, where it's an, you know, internal cum shot, or it's not just happening because it's, for example, a BDSM situation where it's all about pleasing her and it's not really his moment of, you know, having his release. Mm-hmm. So it's all in the end, all depends on the situation. But I think that what we are really looking for here is the variety. It's, you know, the liberation of not having to see the same kind of sexual situation time after time. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, the blowjob and then he eats her and then they do, you know, penetrative situations, positions like 4 or 5, and then, you know, she comes in a fake shout out and then he comes on her, you know. It can really be a lot of different kind of sexual situations.
Going back to talking about like the tube sites and kind of traditional porn, I had Rain DeGray on recently who does BDSM porn, and she was talking about how a lot of the big porn production companies are really struggling because of these tube sites, and that kink.com actually cut its filming in half over the summer. But it really looks like, to me at least, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your company seems to really be thriving to have an engaged audience, people who are willing to pay for access to their erotic viewing. And I'd love to know, like, what do you see as being the future of erotic film and pornography, as it seems we're kind of in a shifting time right now?
Well, thank you very much for saying that. It makes me very happy to hear that you see that this is happening. And it is actually. We are growing year after year, and we have the most wonderful audience out there. People are really, you know, they are contributing, they are active, they are writing. I think that when I started 3 years ago, this project that I'm working on at this moment called xconfessions.com, which is actually a participatory project, you know, people are sending in their sexual stories, fantasies, adventures to this site. And what I do is that every month I choose 2 of them and I turn them into erotic short films. And I can see that this was something that really engaged my audience. They feel that they, you know, can take part in this project. And I think they really liked that idea. But what do I see when it comes to erotica and pornography? Well, I think that it has huge potential. And I think we haven't really seen it yet. Because we haven't seen this this kind of creative revolution happening, but I think it started, and I think it's in its beginning, and we're gonna see much more of it. I think we're gonna see people who are actually filmmakers wanting to deal with sex on screen and showing how you can show sex in all these different visions. And for me, I think that is what is the most challenging. And that is also why I decided with my company that we are starting to produce new directors, preferably female directors. And we already last year, we produced 5 films from different directors. And this year we are looking for many more, because I think it's essential to the indie adult, really, that we can see new creators thinking about sex and showing how do they want it to look on screen. Because most of these porn directors and porn producers, they kind of been the same kind of guy, you know? Mm-hmm. It was the guy, you know, with the car and the girls, and he likes the boobs and the ass, and you know, it's that kind of guy. So he made his fantasy out of porn, you know, and his fantasy, well, that's what it is, but it's not much more to it. And I think that if new people and new blood is getting into this genre and starting to dare with pornography, starting to explore all the potential it has and all the possibly cinematographic visions you can make out of it, then I think we're getting into very interesting material. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get excited just listening to you talk about that and you know, the variety that's so desperately needed. If we need to be able to see different bodies, different abilities, different ages, different experiences. You know, I was talking to my husband the other day, and I told him that I think one of the first videos that I would want to make, if I was going to make an erotic film, would involve 2 really sexy people having really incredible, mind-blowing sex, but the guy would have a soft cock for the scene. Mm. You know, and like, because I feel so much distress from my male listeners around cock performance, cock size. And to me, like, I don't think you have to have a raging hard-on to have amazing sex. That's what hands and mouths and toys and rubbing and touching are for. And to me, to be able to create this erotic scene where it's not about the cock, it's just about having amazing sex, and that happens to be part of the scene, feels refreshing to me, like permission to do hot sex when your body isn't cooperating.
But you see, this is exactly what we're talking about. This is thinking outside the box. It's and that's what they haven't really done, you know? And I think that's why the mainstream porn is getting so boring. Because it's been too many years now of just the same kind of thing. But it is, I'm quite sure it's gonna change. I'm quite sure that this is a new era of, you know, erotica. We're gonna see a lot of new things.
I hope so. We need it.
No, I also think, I believe in people, you know, I really believe in people. I think that we can create awareness. I think that many porn consumers out there, it's just that they never, ever thought about it. You know, they were served free porn on the tube sites, and for a while they just thought, okay, so this is bankable material. I'm happy. This is good enough for me. But then when you start talking to them and when you reach out to them and when you, you know, connect and you start saying, hey, but didn't you see that that girl in that video? She didn't seem happy. It wasn't so interesting. Then suddenly I can see that they are starting to notice it. And suddenly they're like, wow, but now when you said this, now I can't enjoy it the same way as I was enjoying it before. And then they're starting to look for something else, for deeper sexual connection. Because in the end, what we are looking for, when we look for pornography somehow, it's looking for deeper sexual connection. We want to see something that really makes us, you know, feel wow. That's what we're looking for.
So I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit. You mentioned that your projects that you're working on right now involve listener or watcher confessions, viewer confessions, and that's how you come up with so much of this content for your X Confessions series, which for all of the listeners, please go check them out. They are so hot and so beautiful. But I also have listener confessions on the show, and this month's theme is around firsts. And what I've asked listeners is, you know, of course you can share your traditional, like, first time you had sexual intercourse, but I'm really interested in also, like, the first time you realized you were queer, or the first time you realized that a relationship wasn't working for you, or the first time you thought maybe your body was actually really beautiful. If you have a story, I would love to know maybe a first of yours, either as a director or as a creative person or even in your personal life that you'd be willing to share.
Wow, first time story. Oh my God, I don't know what to choose. Of course, the first time I directed an explicit film was something very, very special for me. Yeah. And still today, when I look back at my first film, it was called The Good Girl, and I directed it in 2004, and I had absolutely no idea really what to do and how to interact with adult performers and what I could expect of them and how it was going to turn out and if I had to, you know, jump in there and explain things or not. So I was terribly nervous. And the funniest thing is that I really found the most lovely, wonderful people who just, you know, had such good sex that day. And in the end, I just had to kind of sit back and look at the monitor and enjoy what was happening, you know. So it was like saying, hey, bring out the popcorn. This is already working out. And I think that day, I realized that it had a lot to do with the cast. It has a lot to do with that chemistry. It has a lot to do with finding people who really want to be together in front of the camera. If you don't have that, you have nothing. And, you know, it will show on the camera. That's the way it is. So for me, one of the things that I've done quite a lot is trying to find couples, real couples, but who also work together. And when you find them, you can really, really see that the chemistry and the security they have in each other, it's so different from when you have two people who don't really know each other and who haven't, you know, explored each other before they are performing together in front of the camera.
Well, thank you for letting me put you on the spot.
It wasn't as personal as you maybe had wanted.
No, it was perfect because I love hearing that you were nervous and you didn't know what to do and you weren't sure how involved you were going to have to get, and yet you forged ahead anyway, and then you created this thing that felt beautiful.
But still today, every time I shoot, I'm so nervous. I think I'm probably the most nervous person on set, you know, because for me, it is very, it's very personal in a way, because it's, you know, when we are actually at the shooting and we're about to shoot the sex, it's the moment where everything has to come together. And sometimes, you know, I work for months before that day, and I have my expectations and the things I want to see and to come through at that moment. And I think that's sometimes why you see me in the making ofs being, you know, very like jumping and nervous and shouting sometimes and almost having, you know, an orgasmic moment when it's done. It's just like my kind of release, you know.
Yes.
And a lot of people ask me, you know, they're always like, hey, but Erica, but so tell me, do you get turned on when you're on set? And I always say, like, in a way, I'm, you know, always when I'm shooting, somehow I am turned on, but still it's, you know, it's at the same time, it's so technical. So it's not like you can sit back and have a good time, because normally I'm concentrating on all those details, you know, on the monitor. And if I, you know, if the lightning is right, and if I see a shade in a corner, or if I need to, you know, get in there and take the clothes out of the bed because it's making, you know, a dark spot in the middle, and I don't want that for the photography and for the colors. And, you know, for me, it's on the shooting, it's still very, very technical. But then sometimes I have these wonderful moments when I'm going, for example, to a screening in a cinema or a festival, and I haven't watched that movie that they are going to show for quite a while. And then I sit down, you know, with the audience and everything. And when I start to hear them laugh and relax, and I see that they are, you know, happy, then I feel so much pleasure that it's, you know, it's just amazing, that moment.
Yeah, it sounds like creative ecstasy.
It is really, it is fantastic. I mean, there's really, for me, there's nothing that I can imagine better in life than be able to work with cinema. I mean, I just love it. For me, it's like the biggest passion I ever had, you know, and to be able to make all these films and this enter in this different kind of worlds, because every film that I make, as I work with this short film format, every film that I make is a complete different kind of vision, you know. They're so different between them, and I think that is like having this cinematic laboratory where I can just, you know, I can play and I can have fun, and then I have the best crew in the world. I mean, it's not, now I'm talking so much about me, but it's really, I am definitely not the only one making these movies. We are a big crew, we are a great crew. Most of them are women. I have 90% of women in my film crew. And we've been working together now, most of us, for 3 years together. So we have, you know, a wonderful connection. And the energy that we have on set and the understanding we have is just fabulous. I mean, in the beginning of my career, when I started to work with film, I had a lot more men on set as technicians. And it's very normal to have a lot of men, because most of the people working as film technicians are men, you know. But I could definitely feel a difference when I brought more and more women on board, in the way we are communicating and understanding each other, the language we use. When I worked with more men, I had to be so much more, you know, strict and demanding in my instructions to people. When I work with women, I can suggest things in another way, and still they understand that I'm the director, and if I'm suggesting something, it's probably because I want it to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I say, what do you think if we, instead of shooting in that corner, would shoot in the other corner, you know, many men would just say to me like, nah, don't see it, you know. But women, they are like, okay, so I'm understanding that she's wanting to do this other thing. And I think that also in my crew, with a lot of women, it's so much easier for them to allow themselves to speak out and to share their opinions and not to feel that they are not good enough or they don't know enough about their, you know, their work to be able to make suggestions.
That really came through in the behind the scenes that I was watching of seeing the different members of your crew suggesting design elements or suggesting a different entrance into the scene or making a recommendation of how the characters were going to initially interact or the way that they were going to be dressed. And yeah. And that collaboration felt really rich.
And also the actors are collaborating process, obviously they are bringing a lot to the characters that they are playing, and an important part of that the films are looking so good is also that we are working with them already when I'm writing the script, you know, I'm sending it to them, I'm asking for their opinions, if they feel comfortable in that kind of situation. So we are not, you know, casting a dominant person in a submissive role and vice versa, right? It's important to know that it's all working out. And then to get into the specifics when it comes to sex, that in the beginning, I was a lot more afraid of asking that kind of things, you know, even when I had to communicate with actors and I had to ask if they wanted to use the condom or not, I could feel a little like, ooh, I don't know, should I ask this? Or it's just something kind of happening. And today I realized that I need to get into all details, because all details that you have talked about before shooting, it makes it so much easier at that point. Because then I already know if I'm working with actors and actresses who wants to use condoms or not. They already know that all the paperwork and all the health testing between them is done. They have seen the results of the other people, you know, and all that kind of stuff is very important. If we're going to work with sex toys, they have chosen what kind of toys they would like to use. You know, everything is cleared out, kind of. And I hear a lot, I mean, when it comes to the process and the working conditions for adult actors and actresses, it's very important to say that it's one of the most important things for the ethical working process. It's that you talked about this before, that you won't pressure anyone on set into doing anything that wasn't agreed. That it's clear what payment will be made and what rights you are asking for as a company, right? And I hear many, you know, porn companies out there doing like porn videos for tubes and sites and stuff that are not really respecting that kind of working conditions, you know. Many people are just calling actors saying, hey, come to this location Tuesday on 10 o'clock, but they don't even know with whom they are going to act. And then they don't explain exactly what kind of sexual content that scene will contain. And sometimes, they're even in situations where producers and directors are pushing them into doing more than they had wanted to do beforehand. And it's very delicate because, of course, when you are in front of the camera having sex, you are in a very vulnerable situation. And as a production company, as a producer and director, if you don't respect your actors, then it will be catastrophic. It won't work in the long run, you know.
I would love to pivot, because in the last conversation that we were just having, you were talking about kind of the ethics behind filming and respecting your actors and consent. And I know that you and your husband have launched a nonprofit called The Porn Conversation. for parents. And I would love it if you would share with the listeners a little bit about what that project is.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Porn Conversation started because we are parents to two daughters. They're 6 and 9 at this point. And we realized the impact really of starting to talking to them about, definitely about sex, but also touching the subject of pornography. And then there's a lot of parents saying, wow, what? You said that they're very young. Why would you like to talk to, about porn with them? And then I have to say, no, it's not that I want to talk about porn with them, but it's, I have to do it because I don't really have a choice. And I think this is something very important for all parents to realize, because the society changed very much the last 10, 15 years. And we have to understand that whether we want it or not, today porn online is used as sex education for a lot of young people. And that happens especially because in many, many countries, sex education in schools and in families are not really provided. So what happens is that quite young kids goes online, especially teenagers, obviously, and they start searching for sex-related information, but they end up on porn tubes, basically. So that's why we can't really ignore this situation. And even when it comes to earlier ages and young children, it's not that they are really searching for it, but they stumble upon it. Many times because they are looking for something completely innocent. They may, you know, search on their iPad, in Google for, you know, a Disney princess or some kind of character of a book, Harry Potter, or, you know, the Princess Elsa of Frozen. And suddenly they start hitting on pages where there's sexually explicit content. So I think that instead of just being afraid of this situation, we have to attack it. We have to talk to them about the things they can stumble upon beforehand, so they are prepared when that situation shows up.
It's funny that you say that kids can stumble on it, because I remember when I was, I think, a freshman year in high school, I was probably like around 13 years old. Yeah. My dad and I really liked this television show called Seventh Heaven. And it was a very, you know, like innocent family, you know, show from the early 90s. And we were sitting at my computer and we just typed in seventhheaven.com, assuming that's how we would find out about the television show. And it took us immediately to a porn site. Yeah. And, you know, my dad was shocked and I was shocked, and we kind of closed the window and kind of laughed about it and didn't talk about it again.
But you kept wondering, what was that?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there was the music. There was a little like woman crawling across the screen naked. I mean, it was the whole thing. Yeah. But I mean, it happens. And I imagine that a big part of being a parent, talking to your child about porn requires a lot of education for the parent themselves. Yes. Who have grown up on porn too.
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest problems is that people are so afraid of it, or so ashamed by it, or they don't want it to exist. You know, it's kind of just like, okay, so I can explain what sex is to you. I will explain, you know, the biological function of the body and the reproduction and that kind of things. But then when it comes to pleasure, because in the end, pornography, it has a lot to do with pleasure, right? That's what we are looking for. Then they get very scared. They're not so prepared for that kind of sexual activity just for the sexual activity. And still, that's what you're interested in when you're starting to become aware of your body, right? Because you're not really interested in reproduction. That's not what you want at all. You only want to understand why, you know, you have this bubbly feeling in your body. That's why you want what you want to understand. And when it comes to sex education, what happens a lot is that in school they concentrate very much on the negative side of sex, on the problems and the difficult things that can happen when you have sex. So they start talking about, you know, the how do you say it in English, the STDs.
Yes.
They start talking about that. They start talking about pregnancy. They start talking even about the risk of getting raped and that kind of things. When maybe what you first want to concentrate on is, why do I feel this way? What is happening to me, you know?
With your work for this porn conversation, which there's resources on the website, so I hope everyone will go check it out. There's videos and blogging. What do you hope is kind of the number one takeaway for parents? Like the thing that you most hope that they have a conversation about?
Well, what they most have a conversation about? Especially I want them to start thinking about it and stop pretending that it doesn't exist. I think that's the most important thing. And then it's understanding that it's not very different in the end from talking to your kids about alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, food, sugar, exercise, all these kind of things that you need to know when you are growing up. Because if you as a parent don't have that kind of conversations with your kids, then other people will. And what I mean by that is that obviously they will be curious, and in school they are going to start to talk about things like pornography, for example. And many of them, they will Google it and they will start checking it out. So I would like parents to tell the kids basically that pornography, in the way it exists online in most tubes out there today, is a fantasy, a construction of sex. But it's not actually the same thing as sex. Mm-hmm. You know? I think that is the main idea. Because many, many teenagers who start looking at porn, they are themselves starting to do sex the same way as they see sex in pornography. And that means especially that young women believes that sex is not really something for them. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's something that you do to a man. You help him out to have his pleasure and his ejaculation, but it's not really about you. That's what most traditional porn tells us. And many, many men, young men, they get to understand that a girl should do it for you, you know, she should really do it for you, but he doesn't really get any ideas or techniques or, you know, feeling of how to connect with someone.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I constantly try to stress on the show is that being awkward in a conversation is okay. There's a vulnerability in that that I think invites the other person to then also be awkward, but at least you're moving forward together. And, you know, I think one of the things that is so important for all of us, especially parents talking to kids, is like, you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to be able to start the conversation, because that also demonstrates to your kids that you don't have to know all the things about sex. Like, you can start being curious about your body and you can ask questions and we'll figure it out together. And so I love that your nonprofit is about having a conversation, not about basically having a lecture of like, here's all the things you shouldn't do. And
no, exactly. And it's not really about teaching them, and it's not making them feeling ashamed. And you shouldn't say like, hey, I checked the computer and I see you've been online on all these tube sites and all these porn sites. Why have you done that? And what have you been looking at? You know, that's not the tone you should get. You know, you should more kind of try to engage and start saying, hey, you know, on my computer lately. I don't understand really what's happening, but suddenly a lot of like porn pops up, started to, you know, pop up on my computer. Have this happened to you also? And then maybe they get like interested and like, oh my God, yes, it happened to me also, you know? And you can start talking about it in a more natural way.
I love that. And I hope that anybody who has young people in their lives, be it a parent or an aunt or an uncle, heads over to the Porn Conversation to check out the resources and the videos that you have, because I think it's so needed in this world. Just some support for parents and caretakers in how to even start talking about this.
Yeah, because I agree. I mean, it makes us laugh because it feels very funny. You know, it's like, no, why should I talk to my kids about porn? No, I don't want to do that. But you have to do it. You don't have a choice, really. Otherwise, the ones who will tell them about sex will be the porn stars. It's like having, you know, the drug dealers on the corner talking to them about drugs.
Well, we are at the end of our hour, and I would love it if you would share with our listeners how they can stay in touch with you. How can they find your videos? How can they follow you on social media? And of course, I'll have all those links on the website too.
Wonderful. Well, I'm all over the place, I was about to say, but that's not really true. But obviously, I'm out there on the internet. My main website is ericalust.com, Erica with a K. But then if you want to go and share your confessions, I would recommend you to go to xconfessions.com, where you can also see trailers of my films, making offs, and read other users' confessions. They're very entertaining. I love to read the confessions. No, but they're so funny. I mean, people have so many ideas. And I just, when you read them, you really realize that the porn narratives that we've been told again and again and again, they're very poor, you know. The pizza guy, the jail owner with all the teenage girls in his jail, the mafia in the limousine. You know, it's like those stories are super boring. When you go to X Confessions, you will be amazed by all these fabulous stories by people, you know. And then, of course, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Tumblr, and you find me under Erica Lust.
Awesome. Well, I will have links to everything that you just mentioned, and including the Porn Conversation, on sexgetsreal.com for this episode. And Erica, I just want to thank you so much for joining the show and sharing all of your stories and experiences and aesthetic with the listeners. It's something I'm really excited for everyone to go check out.
Thank you so much. And now I just remembered one thing more, that I have another new site that we just kind of premiered. And it's kind of interesting because it's called eroticfilms.com. And what I'm doing there is that I'm gathering a lot of different independent filmmakers' films that you can actually, you know, they're served on demand. So you don't have to, you know, if you don't want to be a subscriber and a member and all that formula, you can just go there and, you know, download the one film that you want to watch.
Oh, I love it. Okay, well, eroticfilms.com will also be on the website, so everyone can check that out, and all of the amazing filmmakers who are doing this wonderful work to change the porn conversation.
Because I'm definitely not the only one. There's many and many more coming, and if you are a filmmaker and you have a great idea, please write to me, you know, because maybe I can produce your film.
Ah, I love that invitation. I hope somebody takes you up on it. Well, I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. Please go to sexgetsreal.com to learn more about Erica or to share a story or a question with me. Thank you so much, Erica, for joining us. And I will talk to all of you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Psst, don't hit stop yet. It's time for a second listener confession. So here comes a voiceover actor reading Brian's confession all about how he got to his first prostate orgasm. Don't forget, head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support me. And also don't forget, make sure you're on the newsletter so that you can get all of your confessions in for February. There's a brand new theme, and I can't wait to hear from you.
It's been an interesting few months in our lives. In August, my wife and I took a trip to the Dominican without our kids to celebrate our 20th year of being married. I made it clear one of my desires was to be, quote, pegged in paradise, and my wife agreed. So I packed up all the gear in my suitcase and made it through customs. On our last night there, the night the fun was supposed to go down, she drank too much during the day and pretty much passed out for the night. She felt bad and promised to make it up to me when we got home. Of course, the real world caught up to us, and it was several weeks before we were able to find some time and energy to play. One of the interesting things that came out of that pegging session is that I nearly came hand-free. I started on my stomach, and eventually she got tired. I offered to ride her cowboy style with me on top. While doing that, I felt the urge to come without the benefit of stroking my cock. But my legs got tired, and I couldn't quite get over the hump. Eventually, we ended up with her jerking me off all over her gorgeous lingerie-clad tits. I told my wife how excited I was to be that close to the legendary hands-free orgasm. On Thursday, I texted her and told her I had a number of requests for this weekend, including 1, take your time. 2, feel free to use any toy you like. If I don't like it, I'll stop you. 3, in the beginning and until I request, keep the actual penis touching to a minimum. I'd really like to focus on the other sensations. 4, if you feel inclined, I totally grant you permission to be bossy and take over. Dirty language is encouraged. 5, much like I was focusing on your G-spot a few weeks ago, I'd like you to focus on my P-spot. Take your time to explore. And most importantly, 6, please find time to flirt with me during all this. It's important to me because it shows me that you're enjoying this, not just doing it for me. And that makes it more fun for me, knowing it's fun for you. She texted back with a smiley face and said, I'm looking forward to teasing you. Well, Saturday arrived and we got busy in the house. I texted her while she was out running errands. Hey, sexy, I can't stop thinking about tonight. She replied, I'm so looking forward to it. So after a day of family stuff and watching sports, my wife and I retired to the bedroom. She slipped on a pair of lacy satin blue panties and a plain white men's tank top. The tank hugs her curves, and for as cheap as those things are, it really turned me on. After kissing and cuddling for a few minutes, she puts on a latex glove and lubes up her fingers and gently began prodding my ass. I was lying on my back with my knees up and feet on the bed. We communicated very well and talked about what felt good, what pinched, what felt sore. She tried different fingers, different angles, and eventually we found a position that just felt really good. She has short fingers, so her middle finger was the only one long enough to reach deep. But I found if she laid her hand just right, I was able to bounce my hips up and down and literally fuck myself with her fingers. The feeling was quite intense. I could feel the sensations from her fingers in my ass, on my swollen prostate, all the way to the tip of my penis. I kept asking if I was oozing fluid for her, but not a lot was coming out. It sure felt like it was, though. As the sensations grew, I felt something new. A feeling like I was going to come, but the muscles in my crotch were not contracting like a typical orgasm. I fiercely bounced on her fingers, my chest rapidly contracting, my body clenching. all the sensations of an intense orgasm without the squeezing in my cock and balls and ejaculation. Intense waves of pleasure gripping my body. It's really hard to describe. But I just had my first hands-free orgasm. No ejaculation, hardly any fluid came out, but I'll be damned if I didn't have one of the most intense orgasms I've ever had. I had her pull her hand out and I caught my breath. I told her what I was feeling and told her I was pretty sure, but I wanted her fingers in me more to see if we can do it again. So we lubed up her fingers and went back to work. And within a few minutes, much faster than I anticipated, she brought me back to the same intense feelings again. Now, I was basking in the fact that not only had I discovered how to have hands-free orgasms, now I was a guy who had multi-orgasms as well. She asked me if I wanted to try the Enjoy wand as well. Having used this numerous times for solo play, I eagerly agreed. She slid the wand inside my ass, and we went to work. When I asked her to push the wand deeper, the feelings got more intense. Having already had two orgasms, my body was primed for more, and within 5 to 10 minutes, she found the perfect spot. Faster, firmer, slower, we worked that wand until it was just right, and she curled that fucking thing inside my ass and gave me another cumless orgasm. My legs were quivering in shock, and she pulled the wand from me. "I want more." "You do?" she asked. "I'm greedy. Now that I know I can have multiples like you, I want more." "Aren't you a greedy little cum slut?" "Oh yes, sexy. Please make me come again." So back into my ass went the wand, pushing it back to the deepest part of me, stroking and teasing my prostate. Within a few short minutes, I felt the orgasm building again, building and building, and then it started to fade. "Oh, so close. Deeper," I begged. "Fuck me like a little cum slut I am." She pushed deeper and my whole body exploded. As the orgasm within me built towards climax, I begged her, "Stroke my cock and make me come." My cock, only semi-roused, sprang to life in her hand. With her left hand pushing the wand deep into my ass, right on the backside of my prostate, and her right hand stroking my cock, waves and waves of pleasure crashed over my body. I was coming so hard, I had to force myself to breathe. My body locked down and came so hard. The sensations in my ass and torso were so intense, I barely remember feeling the sensations that came along my cock when it shot ropes of cum all over my body and hers. I was able to look up between my legs and see her face, so excited to witness the incredible pleasure she was giving me. My fourth and final orgasm was the most intense of all. I lay there in a daze as she rose from the bed and washed up. She brought me a warm towel, and I really had no desire to clean up. My brain scrambled, my body a wreck, in awe of what just happened. Eventually, I got up and got ready for bed. I curled up into her and cuddled. I thanked her and told her that I had literally never felt anything like that in my life. I said, "Now I know what it's like when I make you come over and over." She laughed and replied, "Yeah, it's pretty great, isn't it? After a night like that, it looks like she's due to get another multi-orgasmic night, just like mine, very, very soon."